Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination, Extra Blooms Edition. These Extra Blooms episodes are revisits of our past guest. My co-producer, Angela Washington, and I very often find ourselves sharing updates with each other. Oh gosh, did you see what that guest was up to? Did you see what they did? Did you see that? Did you see that? And we figured that if we get excited seeing what new things they're accomplishing, that you might too. So these Extra Blooms editions are that, a little extra, where we revisit with a past guest to see what else has gone on since last we spoke. Maybe they've got a new passion project, a new idea, a new book, a new accomplishment, and we like to share that. So feel free to go to themorninggloryproject.com to listen to any previously aired episode. And we love it if you write a comment, share it out, give us a review, and let others know. Of course, you can always subscribe to The Morning Glory Project across all of the podcasting platforms. That way you just never miss an episode. So welcome to The Morning Glory Project. I'm glad you're here today, and I know that you'll love hearing from our Extra Bloom guest. I would say that it is my pleasure to welcome this guest, but first of all, that would be an understatement, but also not completely true, because I wish that the circumstances that had happened to her and her family didn't qualify her to be in this conversation. So I'm thrilled to talk with Sandy Phillips, and she is the rare, in fact, unique guest of the Morning Glory Project in that she's a three-peater. I've chosen to feature her story three times because of reasons that will become apparent. And one of those reasons is that when I was just, and Sandy, you may or may not know this, but when I was just beginning the Morning Glory Project, when I was entertaining the idea and I'd done some research and I knew what I wanted to do, that's when I met you. And I had not yet launched this. It was 2019, in, I believe, the summer. And when I met you and your husband, Lonnie, I thought, theirs is the kind of story I want to feature, and they are the kind of people I want to feature. So I welcome you back. There are certain groups, clubs, if you will, in which nobody wants to belong. And high on that list of undesirable memberships is to be one who has lost a loved one and stolen from them by gun violence. Sandy Phillips and her husband Lonnie are members of this loathsome club, as am I. Their daughter, Jessica Gawi, was murdered in the massacre at the midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises in the summer of 2012 in Aurora, Colorado. Their grief and rage could not be measured, and the loss of their beloved daughter was unimaginable. They made two life-changing decisions in the midst of their grief. They'd cling to one another, keeping their marriage intact, as so many survivors had not, and they'd turn their heartbreak into action to prevent the tragedy of gun violence for other families. When I first met these two lovely people, Lonnie said something that I will never forget. He said, "It's too late for our Jesse, but it's not too late for other people's children," and that's what we're here for. So they founded an organization to offer compassion, support, and resources to help the far too many new survivors immediately after their loved ones are taken and through their grief process. Survivors Empowered is exactly what the name implies, an empowerment group to not only support survivors, but to relentlessly confront legislators and businesses who have the power to prevent future gun violence. Sandy Phillips, thank you so much for being once again part of the Morning Glory Project.
Thank you for the invitation, Betsy. It's always a joy to be with you.
Well, Sandy, we've talked about the tragedy of Jesse's murder before, and those who haven't heard this can go back to previous episodes. I don't want to make you live through that moment again and again. I know you often have to, but what I wanted to talk with you about today is Survivors Empowered and what you do and what stage of its life and your life it's in now. Can you tell us, tell me, tell listeners what Survivors Empowered does and why, what it is that you wanted to accomplish with it and where you are?
Well, that's pretty easy. My background is with Disney, and I spent 11 years with Disney. And the one thing that was instilled about the culture there was the ever-evolving Disney, okay, that it was never meant to stay the same. And so when we launched Survivors Empowered, we were like, okay, what is our initial goal? What is our long-term goal? And our initial goal was, of course, to help other survivors in their moment of need and then to be there for them as time went on. And we have done that by establishing retreats that we do here in Mexico.
Which is where you live now.
Yes, which is where we live now. And we have retreats down here for survivors of gun violence so they can learn techniques and management skills to manage their PTSD, which we refer to as post-traumatic growth instead of disorder, because it's not a disorder. It is something that happened to them.
It's a natural reaction.
Yes. And to manage how you move forward in your life. So we do that through mindfulness and other techniques along with that Qigong meditation, somatic.
Body work and healing.
Thank you. Thank you. So those are the things that we've kind of created for our survivor families.
So you call it post-traumatic growth.
Right. Right.
I'm stealing that. I think it should be put into the diagnostic manual for mental health providers, because you're so right, thinking of it as a disorder when really what the hell else can you have as a response besides this?
Exactly. And the effects that it has on survivors can be debilitating to the point where they can't function. So we want to get them not only functioning again so they can re-enter society and be citizens of this world, if you will, but also to show them that if you take these steps, I don't like the term heal, but you certainly can restore some of who you were, because you're forever changed. I mean, your body, your DNA changes. So with that change, learning coping skills, learning management skills, learning how to reenter the world as a person that you now want to be, because you don't have the choice of being the person that you used to be. That's been taken from you.
Well, I as you and I are recording this conversation on September 3rd, 2024, it is a dark day for another new member of this loathsome club, a new series of members, some of whom whose names we don't know and some we do. And that is that we just heard yesterday about the tragic deaths of six more hostages in Gaza, one of whom is Hirsch Goldberg Paulin, and he's an Israeli American, and his parents, John Paulin and Rachel Goldberg Paulin, gave such moving speeches in memory of them. And I looked at them and I thought, gosh, there's two more members of this club. And you and I were speaking just before we began today. And I was thinking, you know, here their son was taken from them by gun violence in the context of war. Your daughter was taken in the context of an American domestic mass shooting. Mm-hmm. My loved ones were taken because of self-inflicted gun violence, suicide. And that those just seem to be different doors into the same room.
Absolutely. I remember hearing the mom and dad, the Goldberg Paulins, speak at the DNC. And it was a little piece of irony for me because 8 years ago, we were asked to speak at the DNC. And we had just finished the trial of the killer in Jesse's murder. And we had an opportunity to really take some R&R and go and visit a friend in Switzerland and stay there for 6 weeks. which you can't, most people can't, we certainly couldn't have afforded to do, but we could afford the airfare. And we got there. And right before we left, we were asked if we would speak at the DNC.
Which to some people would sound like the opportunity of a lifetime, right? But
Yeah, but it was like, I don't think I have any more left in me. And I think what also happened at that point is it's time to not only take a rest and a step back, but to also hand over an opportunity to another survivor. And what we did was suggest somebody from the Pulse shooting, which had happened just a few months earlier. And that's what happened. And we went on to Switzerland.
Well, there are a couple things to unpack in this exchange. One is that the question that I always ask on this program is, how do you get through what you got through? How did you do that? And you have been an exemplar of self-care and somebody that I look to because you take times, you'll say things like, I know that right around the anniversary of Jesse's murder, you say, going dark for a while, folks. You kind of say, I'm going to clock off. And you go dark around Mother's Day because that's a day that everyone's going to be talking about their children. You're going to be thinking about, you have two children, one survivor and one who's been taken, but that's going to be a day that might be difficult for you. And right from the beginning, this opportunity to speak at the DNC, that I see that that's part of how you have and are continuing to get through it.
Absolutely. We have a responsibility, or at least Lonnie and I feel like we have a responsibility to other survivors. And that responsibility is, it includes giving them their opportunity and their voices and showing them how they can make those opportunities. The media will eventually die away. The cameras will turn off. I remember Donna Dees Thomas's from the Million Mom March. She said to me early on when things were just chaotic all the time, she said, don't get addicted to the red light. And I was like, what are you talking about? What red light? And she goes, the camera light. And I went, oh, people get addicted to that? And she said, oh yeah, watch and learn. And over the time, I have seen that over and over and over again. So the best thing you can do for your longevity, number one, and to still have viability after 12 years now, 13, almost 13 years going on, is to step back and give other people that opportunity.
Well, there are two layers to what you're saying, though. One is for the purpose of your own self-care, which is something that you demonstrate to your survivors, your fellows, you know, taking care of yourself.
Yes.
The other layer is that this isn't about ego. This isn't about, hey, now I'm on a show.
It shouldn't be about ego.
It is for some. And that's true of
everyone.
Yes. In every walk of life, in any circumstance, in every job.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a licensed therapist, and there are some therapists that are, it's very ego driven. There are, you know, so there's this absence of ego. But the third thing and the part that you're going on is that not only is it longevity for you in terms of your own self-care, but that this organization, this Survivors Empowered, was born because of Jesse's passing. Mm-hmm. Had she not died, it wouldn't exist.
That's right.
And it will continue after your passing, and that you built it to be sustainable through the hands of other people. And you built it to, like in the Disney model, to evolve. Mm-hmm. And I find that the absence of ego in that, and it is touching to me. Because it and that's why I admire you and Lonnie so much, is that it has never been about the Lonnie and Sandy show.
Although we have been accused of that from time to time, and we just kind of shrug our shoulders and move on. Because,
well, you got publicity.
Well, yes. And gee, isn't that a horrible thing when you're trying to make change happen in the United States of America? I mean, oh, well.
It's the way. And fortunately, because of who you are, because of how articulate you are and how important the message, people like Anderson Cooper have welcomed you and in repeated fashion, and you've been on programs like that. So I can see why somebody who is coming from an ego place would sort of think, well, why are they getting all the limelight? And by the way, I know you well enough to know, I'm going to say this as your fact, you'd give every second of that up to have one more minute with Jessie, much less have her back permanently.
Yes. Yes, of course. And, you know, when we get that kind of criticism, we just kind of shrug our shoulders and keep moving forward and focus on what we know is our goal and what we know is our purpose. And when you're focused on that and not the naysayers or the people that are trying to drag you down or into an argument or whatever, you just stay true to what you know is your North Star and your moral compass, you're always going to be okay. You know that as a therapist, you know, and you just stay true to who you are and nothing's going to shake that. You may get nervous from time to time. You might get anxious from time to time, but that's the human condition. But the rest of the time is just keep moving forward. And back to the situation at hand and the new members, I hope, part of me hopes that our paths cross sooner than later. They're strong, strong people, and they will have a lot to offer other survivors because of that.
I was touched by the whole thing, but when Rachel Goldberg Pullen said one thing that made me think of you, and she said that she would have to learn to listen to her son in a new way now.
Yeah.
She was going to need his help. She was going to need that. And I think of you, and I think that now, 12 plus years later, that the grief never goes away. The loss never goes away. And there are times, I'm sure, I know in my own experience, that there are times when it's acute. Like, it's just in your face. It's like it happened yesterday.
Yeah.
But most of the time now, it's more of a throb, an ache, than it is a stab.
Yeah, it's around you all the time. Almost like an aura, if you will.
Hmm.
It's there for you all the time, and you can tap into it anytime you want. And occasionally, it taps into you, whether invited or not.
Sometimes quite unexpectedly.
Oh, a song will come on unexpectedly, or you'll hear a phrase that was, for me, Jessie, one of Jessie's favorites, and I'll hear it from somebody else. In fact, Lonnie, just the other day, he said, every moment of every day is a gift. And Jessie had written, every second of every day, there it is, is a gift. And he was using it totally in a totally different way. And it came out of his mouth just as naturally. And I looked at him and I said, do you realize what you just said? You know, and he said, oh, yeah, how about that? And I said, hi, Jessie. You know, it's a little
wink.
God wink. Yeah, a God wink. Yeah.
A God wink.
Yeah.
Well, I'm holding up, those who are on audio only can't see that I was holding up for Sandy something that she gave me, which is one of those, you know, those rubber bracelets that come with mottos on them. And on it, it says every second of every day is a gift. And it's what your daughter, her North Star, her value system, who at 23 or 4 at the time said that, and it became her life motto, and it became her memoriam as well with you. So I have this little blue bracelet with green print, green being her favorite color, I know, because it's the scarf, the color of the scarf that you always wear. And I have this in my, oddly enough, in my bathroom on my soap dispenser. I keep it there so that every time I wash my hands, I see it.
You know, Betsy, what a wonderful coincidence that is, because when Jessie was growing up, I had a little motto that was taped on our bathroom mirror. Mm. And it said, to the world, you might be just one person, but to one person, you just might be the world.
Mm.
And that was kind of a reminder every day that you are my world. And to the world out there, you're just another teenager.
Just a speck.
But yeah, you're just another teenager. Nobody, you know, is going to pay much attention. But to me, you're my whole world. And so it's interesting that in my bathroom, that hung up there for until we moved out of the house. And for you in your bathroom is Jesse's last message to the world. So I think that's one of those beautiful continuum legacy, if you will.
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, good.
It makes me smile. It brings me joy.
Well, I wanted to ask you too about another element of your bio and those two promises that you made to yourself. One, the first one being that you and Lonnie would remain united. Mm-hmm. And I know that after tragedies, couples that have gone through infertility or who have lost children, you know, when they're born or their house burns or other tragedies happen in their life, some couples make it and some don't. Mm-hmm. And I know that in any long-lived love, long marriages, partnerships, that it's not always easy to make that happen. But I'm wondering what you and Lonnie have done specifically to weather this together.
Humor, number one. Mm-hmm. I get him, he gets me. And he knows how to make me laugh. And that has been such a big part of our restoration, if you will, and our honesty with each other. I don't pretend when I'm feeling low, depressed, I'm stuck on something, I'm anxious about something, whatever that is. And, you know, you can meditate, you can use your mindfulness, you can use all those tools. And there's just sometimes that you're exasperated, and he always senses it, number one, and I'm always honest about it. And the same with him. He tells me when he's concerned about something, or he's noticing something, or he's frustrated with something. What we've really been, and boy, I don't want to brag because that's when it comes back at you, isn't it? But we have never picked on each other. Mm. We have never, ever, you did this, or you did that, or you're making me crazy, or we don't do that. It's like, okay, the situation is making me anxious.
So you don't blame one another for the pain or the discomfort or frustration?
No. In fact, I make it a point every day, and so does he, that you are everything in the world to me. I couldn't get through this life, especially right now, without you being a huge part of that and supporting the efforts that we have together. People ask us all the time, how do you work and live together 24/7? Da, da, da. Well, we've been doing it for so long, even before Jesse died, that we don't know any other way to do it.
Well, so some of it is your original design, the people that you are and the fact that you found and chose one another. But I also think that even if you had been, I have seen loving ideal partnerships dwindle and fail because of tragedy, because people do turn, or because their grief is so great that they can't not spill it onto the other person, their resentment or their anguish. And that's the word, their anguish.
Yes, anguish. And it's grieving in a different way from one another and not understanding that person's grief. And we all grieve differently, but if we can't express it, if we can't talk about it, if we can't come to an agreement that it's okay that I'm taking this path and it's okay that you're taking this path in your grief, whatever you're doing to handle that grief, as long as it's not self-destructive, is okay. But quite often with the couples that we've witnessed that they just can't get past that. Most of the time they've had issues that were going wrong before that. And it's identifying that and coming together to say, I love you. You've been the parent of my child. We've lost a child. I still can love you, but I can't be married to you. We need to We need to part our ways. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, that's not necessarily a failure in any case if somebody
is choosing
that. But I think the difference is that some people grieve by weeping and sharing it, and other people grieve by distracting themselves and focusing on a task and golfing or painting or whatever they need to do.
Activism.
Well, how I always think of you, Sandy, is that I think that you and Lonnie have turned your heartbreak into help of other people.
Yeah.
That's what you chose to do with it. Not everybody needs to do that. That's not everyone's mission or calling. Other people need to find a quieter or different kind of way, but that yours was a shared mission.
Yes, we're very lucky in that respect. And my advice to survivors when I see them getting real active real fast is, you know, first of all, this issue will be, unfortunately, with America for a long, 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 long time. It's not going to be cured overnight. It will eventually be cured, but it's not going to happen overnight. And be as involved as you want to be, but also step back frequently. And that's the key. If you're not stepping back and really just taking care of self and your heart and the rest of your family and, you know, other people that have been affected.
And develop yourself in other arenas besides just this one, too.
And be sure that you're including others who have been affected. So it's not just all about you or what you do or what you're working on or whatever. And knowing when you can say yes to things and that it's okay to say no to things. And I think that has, at least for me personally, has been the biggest gift of being able to say, you know, Betsy, I love you dearly, but I cannot do that right now. Or you saying to me, I love you dearly, Sandy, but I can't help you with that book right now. And it's perfectly okay because you know that person is coming from a good heart.
Yeah.
And that's what we, I think, as a movement, if you will, need to get better at.
Well, I have never liked that expression when people say, this is a marathon, not a sprint. I've always hated that expression because that a marathon, you run and you don't stop. And I always think, no, this is neither a marathon nor a sprint. It is a series. It's a slow walk with rests.
Yes.
It's an occasional burst of a run and then a rest. And then it's another walk and a rest.
Perfect.
And then it's all of that. And so I've never liked that marathon sprint metaphor in this way. And because it just implies the wrong thing, that we are not meant to do that. Even if look at nature, you know, nature rests in winter, right? I mean, even every leaf and tree around us reminds us that there is dormancy and that's necessary for growth.
I think there's also with that sprint marathon, this expectation that survivors put on themselves that I must keep going. And what happens is they eventually either burn out because they haven't been taking those rests, or they're shut out by sometimes organizations that are gun violence prevention organizations.
Shut out because they're just too much?
They're too much, came in too fast, too heavy, too, you know, whatever. Or they don't like the fact that a lot of us who are in this world, can't be told what to say and do. You know, it's like, wait a minute, you're telling me how I should be telling my story? I don't think so. I'm living this story. It's my story. I own it. And when they need to be, they meaning some of the groups in gun violence prevention, have to be in control or think they have to be in control, letting go of that and letting a survivor take the lead, which most of us have done over time now, that's very threatening to them.
Well, that's just an echo exactly of the name of your organization, Survivors Empowered, as opposed to you know, and I've always loved the name of that, of your group, Sandy, because is there anything less empowering than having a life taken from you. I mean, you've had the ultimate disempowerment where you had no control. And then after the murder, and by the way, we call it a murder, not a passing or a whatever. It was a murder. After a murder that, you know, you don't have control over, the media at your door or the Alex Joneses of the world saying what they say, and the, you know, the scammers and the opportunists and the craziness, to say nothing of just the sheer loss and grief of it all. You don't have control over that, but by golly, you need to be empowered to tell your story or to not tell your story, and to tell your story the freaking way you want to tell it, and you to use your own spirit and to find your own path.
Every parent that comes into this world regrets coming into it, first of all, but they're there because they want to leave a legacy that their child existed, that their loved one walked this earth, that they loved, that they laughed, that they had plans and dreams that just never got to be lived. And to try to tell that person how they should tell their story, or what they should or should not feel, or how they should or should not move forward in their lives is just, you know, you can give recommendations, you can give lots of resources,
heartfelt suggestions.
Exactly. You can lead by example, if you will, but you cannot judge how they're doing it. And that's very hard, because sometimes I can see somebody spiraling out of control. I can see someone who's drinking too much, whose rage is just right underneath the surface. And that worries me. But it's not mine. They have to own it, and they have to find their way. And they will eventually, or not.
Well, and let's face it, the whole reason that the Morning Glory Project started, the whole reason I began this, is because not everybody does survive
right
what they've gone through. There are people, and you know, people who have taken their lives, or who have developed drinking problems, or whose marriages have fallen apart, or who are just living in rage in such a way that they can't live a fulfilling life in any way at all. Not everybody survives.
Right.
Not everybody does. So that's why I have these conversations. I want to gather the information about how come you made it and share that out.
You know, we were talking about being honest with each other, Lonnie and myself, and how that has helped us get through the rough moments, the rough times. And I look back at the first year after Jesse was killed, and if I'm honest with myself, I was in a self-destruct mode. Mm. You know, I was so busy all the time, just busy, 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 busy. Always had a meeting, always had an interview, always had to write something, da, 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 da. Drinking too much wine in the evenings. You know, I can look back at that and go, whoa. And it wasn't until I took this big, deep breath after the first year tragiversary and went, and what I'm doing, would that make Jesse proud? Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, this would, and that would, and this would, this not so much. And that for me was, okay, you gotta get your act together. If mm-hmm. you're going to be helping anybody else, if you're going to be responding to these mass shootings across the country, what are you bringing to the table? And it taught me a lot about myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it takes, I mean, that's that North Star that you were talking about in a way, that kind of, that touchstone of coming back to what's important, what's valuable, what's useful, what's meaningful. What would Jesse be proud of?
Yeah.
Am I doing? And she would say, Mama, honey, you need to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
She would say, thank you for doing that. That's great. Let's protect other people. And then she'd say, sweetheart, go to Switzerland. Don't go to the... Yeah. Right? You know she would have said that.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember sitting in front of the desk where they were asking us if we would do that. And I said, I'll tell you what, if you send us a round trip ticket to bring us back from Switzerland and then send us back, we'll do it, you know, knowing that, of course, they weren't going to do that. And I said, or here's a list of several people you could invite to do the job for you, and they'll be excellent. And that felt like such a good decision, and never regretted it. And now I look at this family and go, okay, they were so strong. They gave such good speeches. And now their son is gone.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, I love you.
I love you.
Thank you for today.
No, thank you. Thank you. And I know that this is Suicide Prevention Month. And just so you know, you're on my heart and thank will you. Stay on my heart through the entire month. And just very, very proud of everything that you have accomplished. You set your mind to something, Betsy, and you do it.
Well, thank you. And it is ironically Suicide Prevention Month in that two of the members of my family took their lives in this month. So this is you call it the tragiversary.
Yes.
So yes. I think that's why I needed to talk with you today. So thank you.
Thank you. Love you so much.
I love you too, darling. Thank you for being my three Peter.
Anytime.
All right. I've been recording conversations with Morning Glory Project guests for a very long time, 5 years as of the recording of this particular episode with Sandy Phillips. And one of the things that I've learned in the process of all of these 100+ conversations is that we all enter grief or loss, or challenge, or mistakes, or obstacles, or tragedies through different doors in our life, different doors and windows, but that there's something universal in the human experience about the need to overcome challenges, the need to face difficulties, the need to recover from trauma, the need to cope. And it's been my belief in the beginning of this experience, this experiment, this project called the Morning Glory Project, and all the way through even this conversation today, that there is more same among us than is different. That when we come down to the people that we love, the things that matter deeply to us, our basic needs, that as human beings, we really do have a lot more in common than we tend to think. We look at our differences of color and culture and gender and experience and socioeconomic differences, all of those things. And yes, those are undeniable differences among us. But when it comes to love and loss, and healing and growth and life and death, gosh, we're all made of the same stuff. So I chose to have Sandy Phillips today return to the Morning Glory Project because she and her husband Lonnie are so emblematic of the kinds of stories that I've chosen to tell, and they've so deeply inspired me. And this is the end of a 5-year journey of the Morning Glory Project, where I'm transitioning what I'm doing here and no longer recording regular episodes. While I may do a special event now and then, it seems like a nice time to bring the regular pattern of this to a close and to explore what is next in my own blooming process. So with this episode, I'd like to thank Jeremy Brisky, who has done the technology matters for the podcast. And he's done so with eminent patience for this semi-Luddite of a host. I'd like to thank Lisa Daly, who runs the website and has also helped with so many other matters and was also a guest on this program. And I'm grateful to her. And last but most certainly not least, I'd like to thank Angela Washington, who has been my co-producer, who has brought guests to me, who has done much of the social media work, and who's been a constant companion in this process. I'd like to thank every single guest for choosing to trust me with their story. And to anyone who's chosen to give up 30 fat minutes of their time with each of these recordings and to listen to them, I want to thank you. Thank you for opening your heart to these stories, to my hosting them, and to the amazing people that have told them to us. I have so many extra blooms from my experience that I will transition to this next phase with great gratitude and with high expectations of what I can do with what I've learned. And the beauty is these recordings still exist and I can go back and listen anytime I think I might have forgotten one. So I hope that for you, that you know that you can always tap into these recordings and find even repeat experiences or episodes you didn't have a chance to listen to, and you can try them for the first time. And I hope that for you, that helps you to bloom.